Welcome to Highly Questionable. I'm Israel Gutierrez. That's Sarah Spain. We have a lot to say, so we just didn't invite a third person.
No.
There's no time.
Let's we don't need it. We're good on our own. Try us.
What's your reaction to Simone Biles withdrawing from the gymnastics team final?
Wow, the greatest gymnast of all time, Simone Biles, this morning after her first vault, decided that she is no longer going to take part in the team competition. There was a lot of confusion. There was a lot of questions if there was injuries involved. And so Simone, after the team performances, said this.
I just felt like it would be a little bit better to take a back seat, work on my mindfulness. And I knew that the girls would do an absolutely great job. And I didn't want to risk the team a medal for kind of my screw ups because they've worked way too hard for that. So it's been really stressful, this Olympic Games. I think just as a whole, not having an audience, there are a lot of different variables going into it. It's been a long week. It's been a long Olympic process. It's been a long year. So just a lot of different variables, and I think we're just a little bit too stressed out, but we should be out here having fun, and sometimes that's not the case.
Now, Sarah, there's a lot to unpack there about the stresses that she's under. She only touched on a few of them there, but just the idea of having this level of athlete, the greatest of all time in her sport, to have outside pressures affect her to the point where she can't compete. We've seen her over the years look untouchable, look unbreakable, and then suddenly look broken. It was absolutely shocking.
Yeah, let's just start with, it's super disappointing, right? Like, we all wanted to see her and the rest of the team today. We wanted to see them take gold. And it's heartbreaking for her and for her teammates. I'm super impressed, and shout out to them for the silver. An incredible, right? To have this happen mid-competition, to steel themselves and say, all right, all of our scores count. Because the way this team competition works is you have four athletes, you get to select three for each rotation, and each of their scores count. Anybody who performs poorly, that score doesn't get dropped. They go towards the team total, which meant the remaining gymnasts had to compete on every single element, and they had to do their best. And they did, and they won silver, and it's really impressive. The thing to remember about Simone Biles here is that she talked about between the warmups and the competition that she was literally shaking. She had never felt that way before. She didn't trust herself. And that first vault was a terrible score, not just for her, for any other gymnast. And it immediately put the U.S. team behind the eight ball. And she looked around and said, first of all, I don't know if I'm safe competing in the mental state that I'm in, considering the kind of literal gymnastics that she's doing out there. And also, I don't want to take my team out of this competition for all the hard work that they've done. And you look at the way she bounced back from an unbelievable decision that she had to make to pull herself out of this competition, to immediately turn into a coach and a cheerleader to support her team at every turn. There was no pouting. There's no sitting on the sidelines and crying about it. She's like, all right, I'm not going to take us out of this, and I'm going to help you guys get that medal. And that's what happened. It's really impressive. As disappointing as it is, it's also an incredible show of strength.
Yeah, and when you look at the things that she's been dealing with, right, being the only survivor of Larry Nassar competing in these Olympics, and just what she has taken on as a young Black woman in the United States with all the pressure and all the spotlight on her, she said it herself, she makes it look easier. But this stuff is really hard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with other athletes across sports, and maybe we're a little bit more woke to it now, but with other athletes across sports, when they don't perform and it seems to be some sort of mental issue, we don't have empathy for them, at least not in the past. We seem to mock them. Heck, it just happened in these NBA playoffs with either Giannis or Ben Simmons on the free throw line. And that could be something that they probably could use some therapy for, right? Mm-hmm. But no, we have to force them to push through. And so I guess I can't really state enough just how severe the weight has to feel for her to get to this point, because we've seen like a lot of these things she can do in her sleep. We've talked about her doing with her eyes closed, and yet here she can't perform. And let me just say this too, as it pertains to the U.S. gymnastics women. Like, I have been a gymnastics fan since the age of seven in 1984, watching Mary Lou Retton. I've watched all the competitions. I absolutely love it. A silver, because when I was a kid, you could celebrate any medal. Okay, so a silver is absolutely huge. So congratulations to them and to Simone, like you said, for afterward coming out and supporting her team through and through.
Yeah, you talked about the Larry Nassar thing. We've gotten hints over the last year or so of Simone Biles really being honest and opening up about how much stress she's been under, not just as the GOAT, not just doing moves that are so unprecedented that they are named after her. And in one case, they have to use the men's code of points to assign a difficulty to, because there is nothing like it, even in the scale of the women's competition, right? So that's enough on its own, right? Being the greatest of all time, and at every turn, having to do your best to thrill the fans, to up the ante. Add on to that what she talked about with the Larry Nassar thing. She said, if I don't represent this team, and if this team is completely void of any survivors, it's too easy for USA Gymnastics to act like they've moved on and everything's been fixed. And I need to protect these younger athletes, and I need to usher in a new era of USA Gymnastics. I'm competing for myself, my team, and my country. I am not competing for the Federation. All of that, plus COVID protocols and safety issues and no fans and family. It's remarkable that these athletes are doing what they do. And when we see someone finally have to say, I can't do it, there should not be criticism. Because to your point, Izzy, when we aren't woke about this stuff and when we don't understand the mental stressors, that leads to post-career bouts with drug abuse, alcoholism, depression, other things, because you've pent up for so long these things that you wish you could talk about and be open about. And I'm glad we're able to do it. And maybe it sucks for the fans that don't get to see her, but she's given us more than enough. And at this point, we should just be supportive of her and the team.
And you mentioned post-career. She's 24 years old. Like, she's got most of her life ahead of her after this. And think about that, like having to deal with all those pressures in your late teens, into your 20s. Most people will just say, hey, just focus on your sport. Don't worry about all that other nonsense. Well, no, not only does she feel the pressure to, she wants to, you know, she wants to use their platform. And then, you know, like we said, it just came to this. And so it's not, her Olympics, maybe not over. We don't know what's going to happen here. But right now, it's just sort of a wake up call, if you will, through the eyes and body of the greatest of all time.
And finally, Izzy, quickly, not only does she want to use her platform, she recognizes what happens if she doesn't. Because when she posted about the gymnastics center that the Carollis were working at, that was the site of some of those abuses and how it shouldn't be open anymore, a few days later, it's closed. When she posts about some of the people still working at USA Gymnastics that helped enable the behaviors of Larry Nassar and those who were refusing to speak up, that person resigned. Her voice counts so much. So it's not really a choice for her to just say, I'm going to focus on other things, understanding the power that she has to try to make things better in the sport and for the other athletes coming up.
Is Joe Maddon right that Shohei Ohtani is the AL MVP and it's not even close?
Well, the AL manager probably doesn't want to say that too loudly because his team's one game over 500, despite this guy who's running away with the MVP race. But I guess we know in baseball, probably going back to A-Rod with the Rangers, right, that you don't have to be atop of the standings to be able to win an MVP. And if you look at what this man is doing, it is unprecedented, perhaps, at least in this era. And absolutely, he should be the MVP of the American League. But when I look at the race, it just makes me happy in general because I think baseball's in a good place. Not that it was in a terrible place in 2016, mind you, Sarah, when your Cubs
won
the
World
Series.
But I enjoyed it.
But when you've got Shohei Ohtani, just an absolute phenom at the top, and you've got Vlad Guerrero Jr. probably right behind him in second place, looking at, you know, not only current day trying to take over as a great baseball player, but just bringing out the memory of his dad, and he looks exactly like him when he swings the bat. And then I think if you, like, look around, Carlos Correa of the Astros is probably like that third place AL MVP race. And, you know, with all the sort of emotions that the Astros bring out when anybody on their team is doing well. So I just like the idea that you've got those three guys atop the AL MVP ladder, and they're just fun for different reasons.
Yeah, I love that the actual baseball is important too, Izzy, right? The way that Shohei Ohtani is dominating on both sides, the Triple Crown race, you know, the incredible statistics, the home run numbers, all of that. But I like that you focus on the drama because it is important to baseball that we care and are invested in some of these things. Shohei is not only a great sell in terms of doing unprecedented things, but then you get Vlad and, you know, brings back all this nostalgia about his dad and is this young up and coming star. And you're right, throwing an Astro for good measure, get people fired up, get people grabbing, you know, their trash cans and getting PO'd about someone like him being in the running. So drama-wise, this is a really ideal sort of top three competitors. I think I agree with Joe, though. Regardless of what kind of numbers Vlad can put up, unless he starts pitching, and pitching very well, it's going to be pretty tough to catch Shohei.
Yeah, and even if he didn't have the 30-plus homers, if those were all just, like, doubles and a handful of triples, he should still be right here because, like you said, he's doing it from both sides, and nobody's doing that. So, yeah, absolutely not even close, but you might want to win some more games.
Also, can we just give a shout-out to the cojones on everybody in the Angels org for being willing to keep pushing for this, as countless people were telling them after a few injuries that they needed to choose. You can't do it. It's never been done since Babe Ruth. You got to pick. And instead, Shohei's doing it and doing it incredibly well. That just sounded like an LL Cool J song, but you know what I'm saying. I'm just impressed that they didn't weaken under the stress of people, and they didn't second guess themselves. They wanted this guy to be a two-way player, and it's been awesome.
Let's just hope that by the end of Shohei's career, the Angels don't have more MVPs than they have
postseason appearances.
Up next on HQ.
He didn't throw the bat at Garrett. So all the salty Reds fans who are trying to be dramatic, that didn't happen. He rode his boat and then he flipped it and it landed many feet away from the pitcher. Time to play the game that's also in front of a bookcase. Do you question?
Mine are real, I swear. You give us the topics and events and we question them.
Do you question if Amir Garrett had this coming?
We enter Sarah's wheelhouse because, not because of Amir Garrett of the Reds, but he was pitching to Javi Baez. This was a couple of months ago, and things got a little heated between them. Take a look. Ooh, that's because Amir Garrett is talking smack, like severe smack.
To
and that's
captain.
Not Javi Baez, by the way. That's Rizzo.
Yeah, but watch this. Bit. This is when Baez comes out and goes, you know what? You want to talk to my captain like that? I will fight you. And he comes out with a bit of a, I don't know if we'll see this, but when Javi came out of the dugout, he had like a curved back and the hands like this, like a mm-hmm. villain in an Italian mob movie. Like, oh, you're going to mess with my captain? I'll show you who you got to mess with now.
So he did mess with Garrett. Took mm-hmm. him a little while, a couple months later, but here he was hitting against Garrett, and we'll see the reaction.
First pitch, base is loaded, eat it, drop it in, let me walk, I'm rowing my boat to first, I'm going to take my time, in fact, my teammates are going to come and insist that I go ahead and not start another bite.
Does he have to touch first base there? It's amazing to me, because I watched this without any context, and I was like, wow, like, that's really aggressive bat flip right there. And then I went back and was like, oh, that makes way more sense. But that's one of the baddest walks to first I've ever seen.
Uh-huh. It was filthy. It was dirty. It was nasty. And by the way, if you actually watch it, he didn't throw the bat at Garrett. So all the salty Reds fans who are trying to be dramatic, that didn't happen. He rode his boat, and then he flipped it, and it landed many feet away from the pitcher. Now, you could be salty if you want about the outcome of the game, which was awesome. And you could even be salty about the flapping of the gums. But baseball's sensitivities around talking smack and getting chesty are so tired. You can go back in my history. You will not find an instance of me complaining about someone from another team doing this to my team unless it involves throwing punches, right? Do not throw at people. Do not complain when they show you up. Just eat it. And as a pitcher, you're getting the win like 80 to 90% of the time, and you still yell and scream and pump your fists when the odds are that you are going to be successful. So when a batter who has much worse odds, especially in a walk-off scenario like that on a first pitch, when you have history together, wants to get a little fired up about it, suck it up and walk off the field and take your L.
Speaking of eating it, Sarah, what do you think about their Cubs and their future and their core kind of maybe coming apart here?
I will be eating my tears because it is inevitable, and I'm very sad. And I went to the game on Sunday, and I was very excited that the lineup had Javi and Rizzo and Bryant and Contreras and all the people that we're worried about this year and next year. And it's inevitable. Change comes for us all, Izzy. I'm going to cling to the memories of 2016, and I'm going to cling to whichever remaining players I am allowed to continue rooting for in a Cubs uniform. And if any of them end up on a Cardinals team, I'm going to puke.
Do you question Gardner Minshew's mindset on being the Jaguars' backup quarterback?
Well, Minshew went on the green light pod with Chris Long, and even though most people believe Trevor Lawrence will be the starter in Jacksonville, Gardner Minshew is taking this very seriously.
Your mindset coming into a season where, like, realistically, they drafted, you know, who they hope to be the second coming, and you're still competitive. Like, you want to play football. I guarantee that. So how do you take your mindset into a very abnormal year?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this, man. In preparation for the competition, I haven't taken a in weeks. It's not an option for me. Number two is not an option. I'll tell you that. I feel like anybody that comes in and thinks that's an option, that's what they're going to get. Ooh, you know what I'm saying? So,
that's a bar right there.
I've been.
That's so good. It's unhealthy.
It seems
really
unsafe.
To keep it in. Yeah.
100%. I mean, not just unhealthy. It's, I mean, I don't know what it might smell like in that huddle, but something might be coming out of his mouth that doesn't smell.
Wow, okay.
I don't really want to get into that.
You know,
I just love Gardner Minshew, and I'm here for the number two jokes.
Well, let's talk about times when number two is not an option. Tour bus, porta potty, the bathroom of someone that you're on one of the first few dates of at their home. One of those like W or like nice hotels where like the bathroom and the bathtub open up into the bedroom part where it's like slatted. So there's like you can't go there early in a relationship with someone because then you have to pretend like you need to go get a coffee or something and then take a dump in the lobby bathroom. Cause there's no way you could do it with the little slatted things as your only protection.
No,
from
you
the
struck
possible
two nerves there.
Toot.
Absolutely. These hotels need to recognize that we all aren't 22 and in some sort of amazing relationship, right? Like get a door for the bathroom to cry out loud.
Agreed.
Also, I don't want there just to be glass between the shower and the room. I don't want somebody to see me showering either. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the porta potty situation. How do people do that? I went 3 full days without using the restroom at a music festival one time, and the only time that I ended up going was I had to wait for them to clean it and then go out there at 7 a.m. and be the first one to use it. Those things were not made for human usage, I don't believe.
Do you question if Aaron Rodgers looks at peace in Green Bay?
Well, Aaron Rodgers is back with Green Bay. They came to some sort of understanding that they're basically just going to push this stuff till next year. But everybody seems to be happy about this situation, including Aaron Rodgers, who showed up looking like this. And, well, we'll give him credit for the Office t-shirt. It's amazing. And it's, Kevin Malone over there with his famous or infamous pot of chili that he spilled all over. But what is with the glasses? What is with the backpack? What is with the hair? Sarah, I'm going to let you assess this.
Well, I think regular listeners to certain radio programs will know that Brian Baumgartner, who is Kevin Malone, is actually good friends with Aaron Rodgers. And they play golf together and they've hung out before. So maybe just a shout out to his friend on the way in. The glasses are a little less, I'm not really sure where he's going with that. The hair is certainly something we've already seen in Hawaii and on his interview with Kenny Mayne, where he looked like he was snuggled up on a couch and didn't realize he was on national television. He's been giving us these vibes for a while. The last time we saw Aaron Rodgers where he didn't look like he was either in the middle of vacation or potentially morphing into the Big Lebowski was when he was hosting Jeopardy. Ever since then, I think he's just like no shave, no haircut, no shoes. All right, fine. I guess I'll go play some football. Time to play the game that's certain to nail the head nod now that there's only two people. See or no?
I mean, I think we nailed it. You tell us what's on TV tonight. We'll tell you if we're intrigued.
Continuing all day, the 2020 Olympics.
Well, skateboarding is new to these Olympics. And the fifth place finisher in street did this.
Contest nerves or something else?
Yeah. Wait for it.
Oh no!
Do we need a slow-mo?
I mean, I don't think we need anymore. I feel like that's every clip from Ridiculousness. And yeah, I feel like it's the threat, but oh my goodness. Like, I know he said he was nervous beforehand, but I feel like that has to happen like a bunch of times in practices, right? Like, it can't be the worst thing in the world if it happens. Wait. That doesn't make
Wait
any
a minute.
Sense.
I don't know if it gets any better, does it? I don't have the equipment to tell you that, but maybe they're reinforced under there with some padded undies just in case. That would definitely lead the way on the preferred television show of the movie Idiocracy, the name of which I'm not going to say on this show, but if you know, you know. Also, can we just talk about how that video has been circulating on the internet and there's very strict rules about like copyright and like who has the rights. And that one just hasn't been taken down. Like NBC's just like, nah, let it ride.
Wow.
That one's funny.
So imagine this guy, right? Skateboarding's finally in the Olympics. I get my time right on the world stage. And not only do I do that, get the clip that belongs in America's Funniest Home Videos, but you know, NBC and the Olympics don't want to take it down. They haunt the whole world to see it. Thanks guys. Really taking advantage of my vulnerability.
Tonight at 12:40 a.m. Eastern, Team USA versus Iran.
Well, not really that interested to stay up that late to watch this bounce back, although I don't think they will be beating Iran by 40, which I believe is the line still. It seems as though the U.S. looks more like a country who hasn't played basketball very well over the last several decades. At least that looked that way at the end of their last game.
men's basketball.
I'm sorry, men's basketball team, because the women are certainly representing us great. I mean, it's just open shot after open shot. And I don't know what you want to say to or about Greg Popovich, but he is not at fault for this. He is not at fault for the best shooters in the world, well, at least Kevin Durant in there, missing all these wide open threes down two in a situation that shouldn't be that pressure filled for them in round robin play. But hey, let's go ahead and blame Popovich. Sarah, you're intrigued.
I'm very intrigued by how nobody is mentioning that France got a guy who got his eye poked out, who was on the ground for the entirety of that sequence, and nobody drove in. They didn't acknowledge that it was now a 4-on-5 situation against France, and they still couldn't hit a bucket. Like, the ineptitude on display is just remarkable. And if they don't beat the brakes off Iran, holy cow, is this going to get more and more uncomfortable for a team that's full of superstars. And I get it. They haven't had very much time to play together, and it has been a very compact season, including the offseason and last year. But nothing about what we just saw required any more practice than they've had for their entire lives learning how to play basketball.
That's all the time we have for today, although Sarah and I probably could have filled another half an hour easily. That's Sarah. You can catch her podcast, That's What She Said, and on Around the Horn a little bit later.